Okay, well, here we are. Welcome to Roots Runners Rhizomes. We're just getting settled here. We had a little bit of a glitch.
Hey, I'm Sarah Faulkner.
I'm Lauren Jambroni. I like your glasses, Sarah.
Oh, thanks.
Those are nice.
Reading glasses.
Well, we're the Community Health Radio Show here, and today we have really special guest hailing from New Paltz. I'm going to maybe ask if you wouldn't mind reading her bio while I get things set up on this end.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. Sorry, folks, for the little bit of technical Roots Runners are some styling. All right. Hey, we're in the studio with Ashley Saper Lathrop. I pronounced that correctly. Thank you. Of Dreamkeeper Botanicals. Ashley is an herbalist, wellness coach, and educator. After studying with traditional midwives in Nicaragua and eventually birthing her own children, Ashley decided to devote her practice to the health and wellness of women, teens, and children. She is passionate about helping people transform their health using balanced nutrition, herbs, and lifestyle awareness. After her initial studies in Nicaragua, Ashley went on to study with a variety of teachers here in the States, including Sevensong in Ithaca, Matthew Wood, Dina Falcone, and Dr. Aviva Rom. Ashley taught elementary school in the Beacon City Schools before having her own children and beginning Dreamkeeper Botanicals. She loved working with the kids and bringing nature awareness and farm-to-food activities into the classroom. Her love of teaching defines her work as an herbalist. Ashley is grateful for having two resident young students who are always on the ready to forage and spend time in the garden and woods. You'll also find her facilitating workshops at local farms, libraries, wilderness schools, wellness centers, and wherever people are curious to discuss and celebrate the powerful relationship between people and plants. Her clinical practice is based out of her home office in New Paltz and the Hudson Valley Midwifery Center in Kingston. Welcome to the show, Ashley. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, so glad you could come. And we'll post, we'll speak on air and then post on our Facebook page about where to find Ashley once we start getting going here.
Awesome.
Great. So you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and your practice? And
sure, I would love to.
Great.
So, you know, I think that I was always a big relationship with nature. You know, I grew up in like a suburban rural town and spent a lot of time out in the woods catching frogs and sitting with Trillium and just really being steeped in that and feeling a connection to maybe the magical creatures in nature. And that was a big part of my life. But it wasn't until I was older, probably towards the end of my years in college, where I started to make the connection of nature as primary health care and herbs as primary health care tools. And
great.
That was a huge shift for me. And when I started kind of changing the way I looked at things, I really felt this dissatisfaction with what I was seeing in a lot of medical practice going on, a lot of things that were happening where it just seemed like an overprescription of certain medicines. And I was lucky to be studying anthropology and women's studies, so I was learning about traditional healing and I was learning about midwifery. That was a big, like, kind of aha moment shift for me. And then it was lucky enough that in my last semester at college in Albany, I had the chance to go to Nicaragua to study with a small group of people to study cultural anthropology and to design a project that we wanted to do. And I decided that I wanted to work with local midwives while I was there. Mm-hmm. And there was a woman named Fanny who just took me under her wing and took me to all the meetings. And I learned so much from her about just trusting the body and trusting nature. And I'd ask her, well, what do you do about this? And she'd say, sabado, which means massage. So there was a lot of massage. And what do you do about this? And she'd say, chamomile. And it was very basic. And it was very beautiful. And it was very nurturing. And when I left Nicaragua, I felt healthier than I had ever been before. I felt like eating the beans and eating the rice and the fresh food and being in the sun and being with Fanny and other midwives that I met there was just this major paradigm shift for me about how I wanted to live my life. And it was very different. Even though I grew up in nature, I still grew up on kind of a traditional American household where we would go to the doctor for our needs. And, you know, we ate healthy food, but not the kind of food that I feed my family now. It was a big shift. So coming back into the United States, I started kind of my studies as an herbalist, even though I hadn't yet heard that term. And I moved out to Colorado. And when I did move out to Colorado, I was in this small town called Durango. And I lived there for a few months. And during that time, I went to my first herb shop ever, mm-hmm. called Dancing Willow Herb mm-hmm. Shop. And the proprietress is this woman named Deborah. And I just was overcome by the beauty of this herb shop mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the jars of herbs. And I would take classes in the evenings there, and like how to make your own salve and different things. And that was kind of the hook for me. Like, oh, there's this way to go about studying these things.
Right. It's real.
Herbalism.
Right.
Yeah.
I know, all the plants and jars really pulls me into. There's something so peaceful about seeing it. It's so beautiful.
Yes. It's also interesting too, right? Like growing up in the United States, you know, it's often, I hear this from folks, they go to another country or experience another culture, and it takes them a while to realize we actually have that here too, but maybe they discover it out of context.
That's
of how
right.
they grew up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. So, and also just being in the culture of that, like Colorado, New Mexico, it's like for the first time I was living in a place where it was like this whole different micro ecosystem. And I was like, oh my gosh, look at the agave growing here and look at these plants. And it was like I was they were calling to me. And it was like I had my relationships with Trillium and these plants and the woods growing up. But now it was like all of these new friends. And I was
right.
like, ooh, what do you do?
Right.
So it was like that love affair of kind of learning that there's so much diversity in the plant world.
Sure.
Yeah. And then after that, I studied a little bit in California. There was an indigenous woman there who taught me a lot about some of the local plants, like in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time just getting to feel the magic of the redwoods, which is such a unique and special magic. And then I started studying with Sevensong in Ithaca, and that kind of brought me back home to New York, where I grew up. And since then, I've just been studying with teachers that I can. I think I'll always study just through the plants themselves mm-hmm. and then with whatever teachers I am called to, because there's just so many things to learn.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
So much to learn, and it's so exciting. So my first formal schooling, though, was with Sevensong, who I think that's how we met, Lauren, because you studied with Sevensong, too,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right, yep. That's the Northeast School of Botanical Medicine,
that's
which
right.
is based in Ithaca, in case anyone is interested in that. But, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those studies. And, again, getting to travel, because one thing that Sevensong does every year is has his students come with him to the National Rainbow Gathering. So whether you fly or drive, you're often going somewhere far away. And in that case, it was in Idaho in the Sawtooth Mountains.
Mm-hmm. To do the first aid tent there.
Right,
yeah.
to work the first aid tent, which
and,
is a huge learning experience.
For listeners maybe who don't know what that is, can you just tell them what the International Rainbow Gathering is?
Sure. Do you want to, Lauren?
I'm not really sure how to describe it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I went there because it was part of my apprenticeship and herb program. And it's, it's just a gathering. It's a huge, massive gathering that also has, a lot of controversy around it in terms of mm-hmm. what it is or how it's held, often in like national parkland or sometimes on native land. But it's a gathering of people who consider themselves part of this rainbow family, which, to be honest, I really don't understand and like don't really know. All I know is that I worked at the first aid tent and provided physical and emotional first aid to people as part of my clinical training.
Right.
But yeah, if you have anything, if you all want to add anything.
I've heard about it. So I've been hearing about it longer than I've heard about Burning Man. I think it predates Burning Man, right?
It's
in terms of just
old,
like
yeah.
a lot of folks coming together for a short time to make a temporary community that sort of anchors the connection they feel the rest of the year. Maybe is that a good way of describing it? And no one I think has a mission statement or anything about it.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, it seems like an alternative way to create community that's really different than the established way in America. And people, what I was noticing is that there were a lot of educational opportunities for people. Mm-hmm. They were there to kind of steep themselves in things that they could bring back to their community.
Right. There were workshops and it's a free for all that can be, I think, a very mm-hmm. positive experience in some ways for folks and many other things.
That's right.
Maybe also just to mention for listeners who may not be aware of this too, there's a really long tradition in the United States, and I'm guessing other places. So sometimes in gatherings, whether it's the Rainbow Gathering or maybe a big activist mm-hmm. event, whether it's, you know, protests that are organized around something like I was active in the Republican National Convention in New York City, the protests some years ago, providing healthcare on site. So this is a tradition that many herbalists have, and I think Seven Songs specifically mm-hmm. trains people how to sort of work right. with people in this setting. So it's not your field work. You're not your mm-hmm. optimal clinic setting, but kind of on the street
anywhere,
or anywhere.
In the woods.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a good point. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. So.
Great.
Yeah. And I mean, there are, you see, because you're bringing so many people together in the woods, I mean, it's probably 10,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot. And sometimes people are coming with pre-existing conditions where they're almost looking forward to this opportunity. I mean, there's now, it's known that Seven Song will be there, and he has a big base of knowledge, and then his class. So people sometimes come looking for help, and then there's all the things that happen when you bring all these people together in the woods, whether it's bacterial, right. you know, stomach conditions,
right,
or
right.
burns, or mm-hmm. it's a lot of different things. So, and it's really, I mean, Seven Song's medicine bag is mm-hmm. one of the most comprehensive herbal apothecaries ever that I've seen.
Yeah, so and a backpack, totally.
Yes. Yeah, so it's like all of these things are coming up, and you really get a chance to see how different herbs interact with different people.
Mm.
Because I know for me, like, I think of blue vervain as an herb that's really well suited to people who have a lot of tension and hold themselves tightly. Mm-hmm. And then if there's like an overextension with them, or if their neck is really acting up and stiff, then it's like, oh, here's the chance. Blue vervain's right here. Let's mm-hmm. see. Does this work the way that I think it's going to work? So it's, that was a really neat experience. Mm. Yeah.
So then what, where did you go after your study? So you had been out to Colorado, you went out to California, you came back to the Ithaca area, studied there, and then what happened?
So after that, I moved back home to my, you know, the Hudson Valley, and I pursued some studies in education. And at the same time, I was working at a health food shop, and I was running the supplement and vitamin and herb section. So that was a really, again, a really neat chance to work for a few years with people in kind of a setting where, you know, people would come in and they'd ask questions, or they'd say, this is what's going on for me, I need help with this. So it was a way for me to keep working with the herbs, not really having a clinical practice, but mm-hmm. steeped every day in working with people's health, talking about their health. And at the same time, I was going to school to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. I did become a teacher, and I taught in the Beacon Schools for 4 years with kindergarten and first grade. And during that time, you know, I tried to bring nature into the classroom as much as I could. And then when I'd leave, I'd like get to make some of my medicine. And mm-hmm. while I didn't have my own practice at that point, there's a lot of exchange with friends, family, and community around herbs.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah. You know, so that was always a big piece for me. And then when my daughter was born, Olivia, in 2008, I was like, I don't know how I can leave her. I had this little baby, and I just, the thought of going and being gone all day and away from her, it was really hard. So I just kept taking one semester at a time. And after the 2 years that you're allowed to take one semester at a time, it was this decision, you know, am I going to go back to teaching in Beacon, or mm-hmm. Am I going to do something different? And that's kind of when the seeds of Dreamkeeper Botanicals were first planted. And I was like, you know, I'm going to start really embodying the herbalism that I want to see in the community, mm-hmm. that, I, you know, I want to build these connections. I want to do this. And I don't think I'll be able to be the mom I want to be and be the herbalist I want to be if I'm also teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the big shift then. And it's taken, you know, my daughter's 7 now, and I now have a son, Harlan, who's 4. And they're my best teachers, my best people mm-hmm. to connect people and plants and to practice and learn. And it's just been, I'd say, over the past couple of years where I have said, okay, it's time to really get serious about the piece of Dreamkeeper Botanicals being my business and my work that I do on a more regular basis, mm-hmm. and doing more outreach and PR and that kind of thing.
Right, right.
Great. So how did your clinical practice evolve? Did you start working one-on-one with folks or teaching, mm-hmm. or how did... Tell us a little bit what that looks like.
Sure. Well, I always offered classes. I think that that's part of the way that I learn and part of the way that I give back. Like, if there's something that I'm fascinated about, then I want to learn about it. And then I'm so excited that I then want to talk about it and mm-hmm. share it with basically whoever will listen, which hopefully it's the right crowd, you know, so that I'm not annoying anybody. But, I kind of always did that. So at the health food store, I had that chance to really kind of work with people. And then I would offer classes just wherever I could, whether it was my home, if I could have people come over and do something. Or there was a really sweet spa down the street from where I used to live, and I would just offer free classes there sometimes. And farmers markets, things like that. And then relationships would develop that weren't formally clinical practice, but that there would be a lot of discussion about herbs. Oh, I have this medicine you might want to try. Here's this tincture, you know, and that kind of thing started to happen. And then probably about 5 years ago, at that time when my daughter was two, I started putting it out there to the community. Like, I have free consultations to offer if this is something that interests you. And people would reach out, and that was a chance to start building the clinical practice. And, you know, more and more that happens. And then I set up an office space in my home where I have an apothecary and I have a table, you know, where people can come and we can really, now it's formal. You know, now I've formalized it so that people mm-hmm. come and we create a relationship and we come up with a plan together about what's going to be most supportive of them in whatever their health goals are. So what used to kind of just be a little bit more loose has now become something that has some structure. And even this year, I've started working at the Hudson Valley Midwifery Center in Kingston with some wonderful midwives up there. And that's been a big change, just to be in an office outside of my home and have that now happening and meeting more people who aren't in my, you know, friendship community. Mm-hmm. And that's been really exciting for me.
Great.
Yeah.
And how... can you describe a little bit more about the practice itself? And like we were talking before about, you know, wanting to kind of unpack, like, why would someone go see an herbalist versus any, you know, well, not, I guess not versus, but why would someone do that? And just let folks know who are listening in what it's like to work with an herbalist, and if no one has ever done that before.
And maybe also you could talk a little bit about the kinds of challenges and things people come to you with, the things they're seeking help for, and how you can help them.
Sure. That's such a great question, because I feel like ever since I first started studying mm-hmm. as an herbalist and using that word, especially when I lived in Putnam County, people were often like, what is that?
Right.
What's an herbalist? It was a new term. And I've kind of searched for the definition, and then I came to realize in Western herbalism there's so many different definitions of what an herbalist is. So for me, in my practice, I feel like the herbs are kind of come maybe third or fourth in what I do when I'm working with a person, because it feels so important to sit with somebody and first of all hear what their goals are mm-hmm. and know what they're hoping to manifest in their life. Whether it's a really small shift because, you know, they're just, you know, something acute is going on with them. Maybe they have a sore throat or something's happening and they just don't want to go and take an antibiotic. They mm-hmm. want to do something different. Or if it's something different where it's maybe a hormonal issue that's been hard for them for years and years and mm-hmm. they just dread certain times of the month, or they tend toward certain chronic patterns, then it's like a larger shift. So I want to hear what it is for them and really kind of hold that space and help to let people see that it's about them taking the space mm-hmm. and envisioning their best self and what they want to see. And after kind of honoring that, then we can look at what helps to support it, you know, what the foundations of health are. And I think maybe some people think that I'm going to say right away, oh, well, there's this herb for that. And I feel that that wouldn't be responsible, because first we have to see what else is going on. If there's somebody who is just not sleeping at night, then, you know, we need to get to the bottom of that and get that in order first. And maybe there is an herb for that. Maybe their mind is just so racing at night that there's a certain herb that's going to help them to get them to, in that place where they can sustain sleep. But knowing that we all deserve 8 hours and that that's really important is huge. That's going to be the first thing. And then talking about food, and I've seen in my own life just how my health has become really empowered as I learned how important blood sugar balancing was for me. You know, I used to just kind of go about life just like grabbing a bite here or there. And when I realized, I think it was in Nicaragua when I would like eat beans and eggs for breakfast, I was like, wow, I feel great. So it helped me to do a lot of research. And nutrition is a huge foundation of my practice. You know, I bring a lot of different systems together. I'm drawn to the Ayurvedic system a lot. The Indian medicine of learning how different foods and different herbs are suited to different people's constitutions. I also am really, really interested in Weston Price and Sally Fallon's book, Nourishing Traditions. That's been big for me. And just whole foods in general. And looking at how the needs of our kind of where we're at in the 21st century, our needs for food are a lot different, I think, than they used to be, that we need more cleansing with just the kind of environment that we live in. So I like want to support people in their food and then help support them in their liver and helping the system just kind of run smoothly. Mm. And then there's like, are you taking time for joy? Are you taking time to get exercise? Are you dancing? Are you hula hooping? Are you doing the things that make you smile and just, you know, getting to move? Then after talking about all of that kind of thing, then it's like a lot of people wind up leaving with some sort of customized tonic for themselves, whether it's herbs that really just support the whole system, or a mix of herbs that support the system, and then some pieces that might help with hormonal imbalances that they're experiencing. I tend to see a lot of that in my practice, being that I work with women and children mostly. You know, and then we can work with that. And I think that when people leave with a plant medicine to start playing with, it just like gets that relationship going where they can, especially if it's tea, you know, when people are like looking in their mason jar and they're seeing like rose petals or like milky oat seeds or something, there's just this dance, I think, that starts to happen that's like really primal and really cellular that brings people back to like, when really this was something that a lot of people did all the time for health. Yeah. I feel like I said a lot there. Did I
That's
answer
awesome.
The question?
Yes. I do have a question.
No, can go ahead.
Okay. When you had, this just reminded me of a conversation that I had with a really good friend of mine sometime this winter. When you were talking about part of the conversation with a client and got to the point of talking about joy and what makes them smile and like what brings happiness in their life and having that be an important part. I remember having a conversation with a friend this winter about us talking like, wait a minute, what do we do for fun? You know, and we're both people who run our own businesses and work a lot and would never have thought that we didn't have fun in our lives. We just like when we ask that question to each other, we're like, huh, how do I answer that? And not because we felt like we lacked fun. It was just like naming it felt hard because it's like, well, you know, it's fun to like be your own boss and it's fun to work with plants and it's like fun to, you know, what it was just a really interesting moment where I was surprised I had to think twice or take more time than I thought to answer that question. So I'm just curious, you know, when you hold that space with people, what kind of reactions are you getting? And if people are stumped or, you know, do tensions arise or what do you do in that time with them?
Yeah, I know what you mean because it is. I know for myself also.
Yeah.
I'm like, I've been even like making lists up. You know, like, remember to do this thing. Or, you know, I feel like it takes 21 days to build a new habit.
21 so days. Interesting. Yeah.
I've read that somewhere and I've noticed in my own life that that's really huge. So for myself, I'll have these reminders of, oh, remember, you don't want to do this today, running or dancing. Or, I mean, dancing's fun, but I started to run in February. I was like, I need to just run a little bit every day to just get everything moving. And for the first week or so, it was like not really fun at all. But I kept thinking of that 21-day thing. So I think that I'm really careful about how I talk to people about things because I want it to all feel simple and easy. So it's often a question, you know, like, well, tell me about your day. Just, I want to get a, you know, a window into what somebody's day looks mm-hmm. like. What's it like? What time do you wake up? What do you do? Then what do you eat? And I just kind of want to hear an overview of the whole day. And then if I hear a lot, you know, it seems that I am seeing a lot of women who either own their own businesses or own their own businesses and have children, or they're stretched really thin. Mm-hmm. So I'll hear about their day and I'm like, oh, wow. You know, that's a lot that you're doing for other people. But what about you? Right. You know, what are you finding to do for yourself? And then sometimes there will be an answer. And sometimes it's just that kind of like moment of like, oh, but right. I don't have time for that.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's like, okay, well, I get that. I totally get that. But how can we try to carve out that time because you deserve it? And I think it's sometimes just reminding people that they really deserve that. And maybe that's annoying to hear, or maybe it's nourishing to hear, but it's like... There is that peace, and I guess I have that mama side to me too mm-hmm. that I can't take out. It's like, well, let's take care of you.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Thank you.
It's interesting too, because I think culturally, you know, fun is one word we could use. We could use other language too, like pleasure. What do you do for pleasure?
Right.
What do you do for satisfaction?
Yes.
And, you know, and you hear so many people sort of devalue versus the other stuff in their life. Like, you know, you were saying, I don't have time for that. And it's true if you have a small child, you know, and you say, well, sorry, you know, I've got to go to this dance class right now. I can, you know, in the short term, sometimes there are situations where we have to make certain choices. No sure. dinner for you. I've got to go to my dance class. But in the, how does it happen that some people in their lives that it just gets continuously put to the back burner or not even attended to? And, you know, and I hear people say things like, oh, well, I just do that for fun, you know, kind of almost apologizing for something that that's actually really mm-hmm. important
oh,
to them,
right.
you know?
Uh-huh.
And I think that's sort of key to a big part of healing for a lot of people too, is sort of reclaiming that, however we want to frame it, self-care, joy, pleasure,
right.
but
mm-hmm.
it is an area of life that sometimes just gets, I don't know why. And it's absolutely crucial, just like sleep. It's absolutely crucial to a healthy life and
yeah.
a whole life. And I guess to speak back to your original question to Ashley too about, you know, we were talking earlier too before the show amongst ourselves, we were talking about, so, you know, let's talk a little bit about why folks might choose to go to a practitioner. And you started off by, oh, there's some man saying something on the, I don't know who that was.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
That was interesting. So, so Ashley was saying, you know, people sometimes come to you expecting, you know, you're going to say, okay, well, this herb is for that or this herb is for that. One of the beautiful things about seeing any kind of a practitioner, hopefully we could call a primary care practitioner, whether that's an herbalist or your Chinese medicine practitioner or whomever, they're going to not just tell you the stuff you could find all by yourself on the internet, this herb is good for, quote unquote, good for this, right? They're going to take a moment and hear your whole narrative, your whole story. Right. And all of us, even all of us who are practitioners ourselves, you know, we can make a narrative and look at it about, you know, our health or well-being or where we're at and want to shift it and get a little stuck because we all have blind spots, right? And we don't see, and so something that's maybe very obvious to someone else. So it's really great to talk to an herbalist about every facet of your life, you know, and then the herbs that are appropriate are going to get taken care of too. But maybe if Ashley says, hey, how about joy? Or hey, how about exercise?
Yeah, right.
Really important. And you can't do that on your own. You really need support from someone else to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I try to have, like, at the Midwifery Center, I have a shelf where I have a couple of tinctures, and one of them is called Peace, and it's a mix of nervines, and one of them is called Resilience, and it's a mix of adaptogens, which, you know, adaptogens are herbs that really help us with stress and help our resilience and help with nourishing our adrenal system. But so that's out there, you know, if somebody wants that kind of blanket approach. But then if I hear that somebody is suffering and there's been some grief in their life or something, then I could add some herbs that are appropriate to that and herbs that are going to help protect their heart center, you know, the spiritual center. And that's where the kind of alchemy and the magic comes in, where we can start crafting things for people that really help whatever is going on for them. And that's the piece where you're right, people can definitely reach out and find things, but there is something about the healing relationship that comes when you're sitting together and co-creating. And then and I also find that a lot of people are still needing the shift where they're seeing this herbs for that and they're just kind of throwing it with some other things in water and throwing it back. And one of my most exciting things is in practice when somebody starts feeling a special relationship with one plant or another plant and really feeling a shift, and like their intuition comes in. And it's like, oh, instead of just taking it in a way where it's just part of the morning routine, but it's like, oh, I have a headache right now and I'm feeling really tense and I'm going to go reach for some skullcap or, you know, something, and then actually putting it in the water and feeling the shift. Because that's huge. That's a really exciting time.
Right. That's another kind of aha moment. Yeah. For folks, which is nice.
Yeah.
Right. And I like how you just mentioned too the spirit piece of it, and spirit meaning kind of, a person's own essence or energy, like who they are on a different level than just their physical being. Because working with plants can tap into all sides, not just, right, your physical headache, but...
We've got some train energy moving through right now. Woohoo! The old 232 making its visit during our show.
Yeah. A couple less honks this time.
Yeah, for those of you who've never been to the WGXC office in Hudson, we're located right north of 7th Street Park, which is awesome to look out on. And a train actually runs right through the middle of the park, and it always visits us. I always feel like I'm on, do you remember Mr. Rogers' neighborhood? And there was like a little trolley that would, I'm like, hello.
I'm glad to be here to see it, because you wouldn't realize with that sound what a quaint little space we're in. You know? Such a sweet town and character with the train going by.
Yeah.
And so to get back to, we were talking about intuition and maybe a little bit about energetics. You earlier mentioned that you're fond of Ayurveda. Are there any other kind of, and I'm going to lump these together because in my mind, in practical terms, spiritual and energetic systems are often integrated or interrelated, depending on if it's a cultural system we're talking about. So even if you're a person who maybe bristles at the word spirituality, just to know that, you know, many systems of thinking arise in a kind of some sort of engagement with, you could say spirituality, or you could say energetic lens, way of looking at the world. And of course, energetics are even part of modern string theory, so there is even a scientific atheistic approach to energetics. So,
right.
So, aside from Ayurveda, have you studied?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I realized I kind of left off with some of my studies, but after Sevensong, after studying with Sevensong, and I came back, and I was working at the health food store, and I was going back to school for teaching. There was a really awesome opportunity where Matthew Wood was coming, and he was offering a year-long course in Rosendale. Herbalist Dina Falcone and a woman named Jen Prosser, who lived here at the time, and she's since moved on to New Mexico. They would host him for a weekend every month.
Wow.
And we'd study together Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And he was really, he has his own system of energetics.
And he's based where?
I think he's in Minneapolis
now. Oh, okay. He's got some great anthologies and books.
Yeah, his books. And he is really one that is so into energetics. Right. Like, and he'll just use tiny drop doses of tinctures in order to create a little shift. And he's just, I mean, his way of seeing plants is amazing. It's like, I've never met anybody who quite fits into this. Like, it's just a whole language for him. It's like, I feel like it was his portal into... like he even said it's like the way he began communicating with people even was through plants. Like he just sees things in this really special way that I felt so lucky to witness. And he talked a lot about tissue states. That was his way, you know, whether it was a damp and I'm trying to think of the other word he used for, like, there were all these different ways it was part borrowed from traditional Chinese medicine, and then definitely with the big twist of just Matthew Woodism, you know. And where he'd talk about irritation, and he'd talk about stagnation, and he'd talk about which herbs would help to work with these.
So he fitted into like a constitutional framework?
He did, but in the way of thinking that people could have various constitutional things going on at the same time. Right. Whereas Ayurveda does break it down, and people tend to have dominant doshas or constitutions that are always with them. And then maybe one of the three will go out of balance a little bit, and you have to work on that. His was like, it's a even larger, more comprehensive way of looking at things.
And for our listeners, you might remember two radio shows ago, we had Rebecca Altman on talking about her work with sort of Western, how would we describe it?
Temperaments and energetics
sort of
are in there.
Arising, the constitutional frameworks arising from maybe more of a Western European. Where when mainstream medicine was still deeply rooted in constitutional frameworks.
And she studied with Jim McDonald,
right?
Who has his own take on all of it, too.
Exactly. Just want to put that out there for listeners to connect to what Ashley's talking about now. So this is another, yet another way of framing things.
It's interesting because we do start to see these patterns, and there's so many ways of looking at it. Like, I have Solomon's seal in front of me, and I find that it's a really great herb for me. It's very calming, and it's also very grounding. When I think about the plant itself and how it grows, how it's the rootlet, like the rhizome, the part that grows underground that we're using, and it grows in these like deep, moist, rich forests, that's its own energetic, and it helps me realize that maybe I need some cooling and I need some nourishment and moistening. So it's a lot of that too, kind of. You know, and I don't always know that I have the words for it, but there's like this piece that comes from the Matthew Wood work and comes from my relationship with plants and my studies of TCM and Ayurveda, where I start to sense maybe that somebody is in an irritated state and that they're also dry, and then, oh, maybe Solomon's seal would be good for them because of the conditions of the plant. So it's always evolving, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Thank you.
Thanks. So you studied with Matthew Wood, and who else around this period?
So at that point, I kind of went back into, you know, just concentrating and teaching. And then my kids were born. I think after Olivia was born, I decided that I really wanted to study with Dina Falcone. I had known her through, you know, just herbalism and going to conferences with her and really drawn to her. She brings a lot of nutrition, especially Weston Price nutrition, into her practice. And she has these beautiful gardens. And she's just a really great voice for the plants and for keeping things really basic, you know. And she has her first book. A lot of people have been talking about a book that she put out last year, I think it was, Foraging and Feasting. And it's gorgeous.
Beautiful, yeah.
It's just a gorgeous book. And I love it. But even before that, like way back, she wrote a book, and there's just recipes upon recipes. I think it's called Earthly Bodies, Heavenly Hair.
Yeah.
And that was like something really cool that I loved about Dina, was like she just could figure out ways to just take these simple ingredients and mix them. So I studied with her in a course where we'd meet once a weekend, and we'd be in her gardens, and we learned recipes, and we went through different things, and it was just another take. It was like another chance to be with somebody who was passionate about plants and hear another voice in that. And then after that, it was kind of like sometimes I would just call Dina, and because I was always looking for a mentor in my herbalism and in my clinical practice, and we don't have a really thriving community of elders here in the Hudson Valley of herbalists, so we're kind of creating the network now, you know, and being here, and some of the work we've been doing with Hudson Valley Herbal Alliance to have regular meetings, and just the conversations are so great, but it feels new to me, and I was craving like someone to talk to. So sometimes I would make appointments with Dina and just bring my questions and the things that came up with my clients and kind of have her support and overview that. And that was really helpful for me at a time. And then eventually I just said, you know what, I need something ongoing. I need to continue studying. And at that point, my son had been born and I was really stretched. And so I joined a correspondence course. And that was with, she's now a doctor, Aviva Ram, who is a midwife herbalist. And she's now a doctor, and she's a great force into integrating it all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So she's been really inspiring to me, and just seeing how she gets down to the roots, and she just brings the functional medicine community and like looks at the whole picture and brings it all together so that nothing's like thrown out, you know, like that idea of the baby throwing out with the bathwater. There's like so much good in so many systems. Mm-hmm. And if we can look at it all, it's awesome. And that's kind of always my goal, like just to integrate, you know. A lot of people that I see do have a primary care doctor, and then they'll ask me questions about, can I take this with the thing that I take for my migraines? And, you know, and we'll talk about it, and I have resources where I can find out what's safe, and I can talk to them about things and help. But I want to encourage the conversation with the doctor too, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm always saying we really need to get the whole discussion going. So let's see how we can do that more and more. And that's kind of my goals for my practice and, you know, in the years to come, to just create more of that integration between the conventional and the complementary.
Great.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about any other goals you might have for your practice coming up, where you're going? Your kids are growing up and becoming more independent too, so I'm imagining you're going to have different directions you might be going in.
It's true. I've been thinking how I love teaching so much, and I often will teach in the community, and this year I've decided to finally kind of go through the butterflies and put myself out there to teach at a conference. Mm. And I'm going to teach at Herbstock in Boston. Great. This June. So Great. That will be like something that I wouldn't have done before. And mm-hmm. I'm glad to do that. And I'm really glad to just get back into the conferences again. I got to go to the Women's Herb Conference in New England again last year. I saw Lauren there. Mm. And it was just so good to be steeped in that. So, you know, I just want to be able to do more of that. I want to start being able to write more. Mm-hmm. Working, you know, I've always enjoyed writing, and I've been wanting to develop my website and kind of start blogging a little bit and just getting back into that practice. And, you know, just building my practice so that there's more room for more clinical clients. My son's in school 3 days a week this year, and that was a huge shift, whereas it used to be just a couple mornings. So there's more room now, and I really hope to be able to just work with a lot more people in the community.
That's great.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you have some events or classes coming up, and how can folks find out about you and find out about what you're offering, read your writings, and attend classes? So want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So April 7th at the Hudson Valley Midwifery Center in Kingston, a friend of mine named Johanna Hergert, who is an acupuncturist, and I are going to offer a free class. It's at 6:30, and it's on enjoying spring and dealing with allergies. Mm. So how to just use nutritional, herbal, acupuncture, and lifestyle techniques to really get to the bottom of allergies, both chronic and acute kind of things, so that spring isn't such a headache for people as it often is right. in the Hudson yes. Valley. So that's on April 7th. On May 1st, I'm going to be leading a group at Phillies Bridge Farm in New Paltz. At 1 o'clock, we're going to go out into the woods. They have a beautiful nature trail there. And we're going to learn a lot about the spring edibles and forage and make a meal together. We did that last year at the farm, and it was just so much fun. It was a big mix of people, kids, and all different folks. And, you know, there's just so many good greens out there right mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. that we made pesto, and we made soup, and we made herb butter, and we just had a really nice time.
Nice.
So we'll do that then. And then I'm pretty sure that's it for now. I'm working with some women on some permaculture ideas about building together classes that we all share through this group that we're creating. And we're working on a series for new parents who just have had kids and are kind of learning about some different ways of caring for them. So there's some of the women do body work, and then there's an acupuncturist and a woman who owns a farm will come and talk about nutrition. And so that's still kind of that I'll talk about on my Facebook page, which is dreamkeeperbotanicals.com. No, just Dreamkeeper Botanicals. The website's still in the works. You can go there, but it's just really a placeholder, and it will direct you to the Facebook page where I kind of try to keep the events going there.
So that's dreamkeeperbotanicals.com. And then that'll direct folks to the Facebook page, your email, contact info. So folks want to either come visit with you for a consultation or just keep in the know on classes and other events you're offering.
Yeah, that's great. For now. And then I'll be, Herbstock's going to be really fun in June. That's right, June 4th and 5th.
Right, the first weekend, yes.
Yeah, and then there's a really wonderful artist, textile artist and nature artist named Katie Grove, who is in the Hudson Valley community, and the two of us will offer a class in September together.
Oh, that's great.
We had did one once before, and it's basically on herbs for art and medicine.
Hmm. Nice.
Yeah, so I really enjoy that one a lot. Yeah.
Maybe for our listeners, I'd like to hear both of you speak to kind of your favorite herb conferences and things that you like to attend. And I know sometimes folks wonder if they have to already know a lot about herbs to attend, or are there good conferences that folks who are just sort of starting out with their knowledge would feel comfortable attending? Do you want to talk a little bit about, because you've both mentioned a couple that you like to go to.
Yeah, I know. I want to hear Lauren's ideas about this.
Yeah, I'm new to the herb conference circuit, to be honest. The last couple years, I've just been on the weekends. I am at the farmer's market, and for the last 5 years, for the majority of the time, I'm a one-woman show. So I haven't been able to do a lot of traveling for classes and conferences. However, I do, the Rad Herb Collective used to hold convergences that I really liked, and those were on herbalism and health justice, and that Mary Blue of Pharmacy Herbs in Rhode Island maintains a Rad Herb Convergence, so herbalists of all skill levels who are into social justice work and into health justice work convene in Providence for that. And Mary Blue also has a level one and a level two herbalism program, and a great, once you've kind of finished those, a great herbal intensive throughout the summer program, which is like one weekend a month for 6 months, where she brings in lots of different practitioners and teachers, which is something that I've done for the last couple years, which I think is really great. And that's for more intermediate folks, or folks who have done like an intro to herbalism course already. Mm-hmm. The New England Women's Herb Conference, which happens in August, is great. And that's, someone who just has never studied before, or folks who have been practicing and studying for years. There's so many different really great workshops for all levels. So I've had a good time there over the last couple of years. I'm dying to get to Herbstock in Boston, but I'm never able to make it with just work conflicts, so you have to tell me all about that.
I
one
will.
What else?
I mean, I had gone back in the day. There was there's an organization that still exists, the North Eastern Herbal Association,
right?
And I had gone to a couple of their conferences. They were great.
Was that Green Nations?
No, but that's another
right,
one.
That's
does that still go
it's
on?
It's not. Think,
no,
it actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, I had
ago?
Gone a couple of years ago, and mm-hmm. then either that was the last one or last year was the last one. Mm-hmm. And then the two, Pam Montgomery had been running that
right.
for probably 25 years
right.
or more.
Oh, wow.
And then she had brought in Brittany Wood Nickerson to help with that. And it's a beautiful conference, and I was so disappointed to hear that it's not happening anymore. Oh. And it was, again, for like all levels, you know. But they just have so much else on their plate that they needed to focus on that. But I've just kind of, so besides the NEHA conferences that I used to go to, I'm just starting to get back into the conferences. And I love the New England Women's Herbal Conference. It's really a very nourishing experience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a chance to kind of get away from everything, because you're actually staying there and sleeping there and eating there. So, and it's a chance to just kind of, I feel really nourished when I get back from an experience like that. Mm-hmm. I also went to the International Herbal Symposium last year.
Oh, right. I've never been to that, but I would like to go.
Yeah, it's a very interesting kind of feel when I was used to the other conferences, and this is on a college campus.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of has a different energy to it, I guess.
Sure.
You know, but the neat thing about it is that you're bringing in teachers from all over the world.
Right.
And that's really neat to get to take classes with people from Costa Rica. And Dr. Rosita Arvigo is there, who, you know, I'm really inspired by her work with uterine massage is what she does. So it was a really neat thing, but it was just a very different kind of conference.
Sure.
And I know there's just so many happening now with like the herbal resurgence. I just I see everywhere. I saw that there's one happening in October in Austin with Nicole Telkis. I was just looking at that.
Oh, great.
And that looked good. And actually, Karen Sanders is going to be teaching there.
Oh, that's great.
I was like, oh, I wish I could get out there.
Right.
And then there's the AHG conference every year. And I know this year it's in Pennsylvania.
That's the American Herbalist Guild.
Yeah.
Right. And you could probably go on their website, too, to find a directory of conferences, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Would it be okay if I ask a switch and ask a question?
Yeah.
I know we only have about 10 minutes left, but thinking about conferences and thinking about learning and thinking about the classes that you're going to be offering, I was curious if you could speak to us and our listeners out there a little bit about spring and what are some of your favorite kind of self-care things to do in spring or things to look out for or notions or ideas of what's useful at this time.
Sure.
And maybe common challenges that some people, but maybe not everyone has, like allergies.
Yeah.
But even if you don't have allergies, what's a great way to stay in balance this time of the season?
Such good questions. And it's so exciting that it's spring. So happy that I'm seeing things leaf out, the trees and the understory. You know, I really like to eat my medicine in the spring. I get so excited about, like, I'm just wanting fresh greens so badly. So I feel like I'm walking around really blissed out for a couple of weeks when the greens start coming up because I start eating so many of them. You know, I start doing a lot of foraging and bringing the kids out for that and doing walks. And so like the garlic mustard I'm making pesto with, and the daylily shoots and the nettles are out. And even the oxeye daisy leaves I love to eat, and just kind of doing a lot of, violets, you know, sometimes I'll make violet syrup or make beautiful salads with the violet leaves and the flowers. There's just so many vitamins and all of that. And a lot of these plants are so bitter, like the dandelion greens and the garlic mustard, but then there's like the sweetness of the violet leaves and the shoots from the daylilies. And I just wind up doing so much of that when I can, and also kind of encouraging other people to do that if possible. And, you know, then there's the nettle infusion and the nettle soups, and just trying after a winter of no matter how hard we try, it's easy to get kind of stagnant, and we're not able, again, some people have root cellars, people can go to stores and buy greens and everything, but it's just not the same as what's coming up from the earth. So it's like that perfect balance of we've been kind of stagnant and we need, you know, people often talk about detox. I'm not a big believer in like a formal detox. I am like a big believer in the 12-hour detox at night. You know?
Totally. Thank you for that.
And that awesome organ, the liver, which is working 24/7.
That's right. So drink your water and eat your greens. So now's the perfect time. If there's some stagnation in the liver, just to get out there and like find an herb walk in your town, or, you know, get a book like Dina's Foraging and Feasting. There's so many good resources to just start eating the wild edibles. And that's my favorite medicine right now in the springtime. Although I can't tell you how excited I am about rose season.
Ugh.
I love making rose medicine.
I'm already planning on it, like planning for it.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Me too.
I mean, I just love drying the petals, but I love making elixirs. Mm-hmm. Making rose elixir is one of my favorites. And then this year I've been reading Conversation Among Some Herbalists about keeping thorns in the medicine just for good boundaries and that
absolutely.
Kind of thing. So just fun to experiment with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. I love the spring bitter greens. They help just get things flowing and moving again and help support the liver doing all of its hard work. But there are so many of them are also so vitamin rich. So while they're encouraging like a good healthy, encourage the body to do its own detoxifying, they're also then nourishing and really providing a lot of vitamins and nutrients. So it's not like some deep stripping cleanse. You know, I think typically through seasonal changes, but especially winter to spring, a lot of folks feel the need to kind of like clean out a little. I think
That's
it's a natural, like innate feeling, but there's a lot of products on the market that really literally just like wipe you out on the inside and are too harsh and are too stripping, and then create a lot of imbalances because they go too far, right? So the things that are just naturally coming up are a great way to just kind of engage in that process of wanting to kind of clean out, feel lighter, you know, move from winter to spring, but without then like creating a whole mess of. So folks can learn more about that from Ashley and Dreamkeeper Botanicals. You can find her on Facebook.
We have rose medicine. Talking about joy. That's rose seems to me, you know, I mean, there's a very good reason they're such a traditional gift as a bouquet, right? You just automatically feel this heart opening when you see or smell roses. They're really such a powerful medicine. And, you know, often we think of them in contemporary society as, you know, something decorative, but it's a really powerful medicine.
And there's so many good ones. I'm in love with Rosa Rugosa, the I mean, it's amazing. And there's this energy of growing by the beach, which for me is really healing. And it's really fragrant, which is amazing. And the rose hips are huge. So it's
Yeah, they are.
But we have multiflora rosa too. And I'm really, you know, it's fun to use invasives. Or I mean, I don't love that word, but it's true that these are plants that have been introduced. They didn't first grow here and they've really taken hold and are doing, being prolific. And let's be friends with them, you know, find what kind of gifts they offer. And multiflora rosa isn't as easy to make medicine of because of the rosa rugosa just has bigger parts, but it's a wild, delicious, fun medicine. So I'm excited about that.
What kind of medicine do you like to make with the wild rose?
I make elixir and then I'll always dry rose hips whenever I can.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great.
Can you tell folks what an elixir is exactly?
Yeah, I would love to. And I don't, I do always do like a pure rose elixir, but I am like to do things with Damiana and rose and cinnamon and really bring in a lot. But basically an elixir is a really fun and easy thing where you can just take a mason jar and with I'll give you my favorite recipe for a rose elixir.
Awesome.
Where you pick the petals. And this year I'll probably pick, you know, some pieces of branch with thorn on them too. And I'll just fill that whole jar, whatever size mason jar, with the rose petals and the different parts that call to me from the rose. You know, and always offering gratitude and being so grateful for this gift of the rose and feeling the message of it while I'm making it. Because that's the nice thing with a fresh rose petal elixir is that you're like right with the plant as you're picking and you're like
and you're
in
smelling
her space.
And
it's just this beautiful interaction. Yeah. And then after I've filled the jar, then I'll fill the jar a second time. And this is always an interesting herbal thing, right? Where you like can fill a jar. How many times can you fill a jar?
Right.
Then you fill the jar with honey. So I'll get like a nice local honey and I'll fill the jar with that. And then I really like brandy. And I'll fill the jar a third time with brandy and I'll shake it up and I'll keep it in a, like a cupboard for about a month and just shake it whenever I remember. And then after that, I strain it and just make that's the elixir, the mix of the honey, the brandy, and the plant.
Nice.
Yeah. Great.
Thanks for telling me.
And then you can eat the petals.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
So good. Well, I guess maybe we just have a couple more minutes. So we want to remind folks about how to get in touch with Ashley.
And your upcoming classes.
Yes, please. Go to my Facebook page, Dreamkeeper Botanicals. And you can check out my website. I will be working on that. So eventually there will be more on there. And, you know, email, get in touch through Facebook and come to the classes that are coming up. If you're needing some support with allergies, there's a free class. It's a Thursday night in 2 weeks at 6:30 in Kingston at the Midwifery Center. That's April 7th. And then Philly's Bridge Farm, if you're interested in doing some foraging and gathering and eating some of the spring greens that we were just getting so excited about, then join us for a group walk on May 1st at 1 o'clock at Philly's Bridge Farm.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Terrific.
And Dreamkeeper Botanicals on Facebook. And as always, our show is the fourth Monday of every month from 2 to 3 p.m. So the next show will be on Monday, April 25th. And we'll also post info about Ashley on our Facebook page, Roots Runners